Hello and welcome to Turkey Abroad. My name is Nicholas Morgan and I'm a freelance journalist with Aval News. And today I'm speaking with Dr. Seth Frantzman, who is the executive director at the Middle East Center for Reporting and Analysis and a Middle East analyst with the Jerusalem Post. Welcome to Turkey Abroad, Seth. So this week we had another country in the Persian Gulf announce diplomatic recognition of Israel, Bahrain. This comes almost a month after the United Arab Emirates did the same with the support of U.S. President Donald Trump. Turkey did not take kindly to either announcement. Its President Recep Tayyip Erdogan didn't threaten to pull his ambassador from Abu Dhabi, and Turkish state media criticized Bahrain's decision shortly after it was made. I want to start this conversation off by asking you, how much do you think any shared concern in Jerusalem and Gulf capitals about Turkey played into these decisions?
Well, I think a lot. I really believe that sometimes the Turkish element is actually kind of absent from the discussion, unfortunately, and that's because of many reasons in the West, partly because of the kind of anti-Iran lobby that exists, which tends to see everything through an Iran lens, and also then therefore plays into other issues which people that are pro-Turkey or whatever that don't want to discuss this realities. But I think actually when we look at the role that Turkey has played in the last few years, especially in the Gulf in terms of the Qatari alliance, I think the large countries, Saudi Arabia, UAE, obviously the influential countries in the Gulf, and therefore a lesser extent Bahrain, which is an important country but is not powerful militarily, and I think has to gauge what is going on in Riyadh and Abu Dhabi to decide what it's doing a bit. These countries, I think, are intensely aware and concerned of the growing Turkish role and ambitions in the region. Iran is obviously their neighbor across the water, and they've had to deal with Iranian problems and threats for decades. So they know what the Iranian enemy or bear is. I mean, if you're in Abu Dhabi, you know what Iran is. It's not a secret. Of course, they're worried about Iran. Of course, they're very much worried about the Houthis or Hezbollah. And that's of course, that makes sense. But I think in the larger strategic regional paradigm, if you look at the rhetoric of Riyadh or Abu Dhabi or their friends, they're very concerned about the Muslim Brotherhood and the type of religious worldview that comes from Ankara, which would like to replace them. Ankara, by the way, is not interested in using the Muslim Brotherhood concept to, for instance, replace the Shiite regime in Tehran. In fact, it would prefer to work with it in terms of political Islam. But I think Turkey sees itself as a rising Islamic power, which is juxtaposed to the kind of power that Saudi Arabia previously probably had over the Islamic world. And I think it's very important to understand, therefore, when we look at how the UAE and Saudi Arabia and Egypt are involved in Libya, when we see how they're involved in the Eastern Mediterranean or other issues in the region, I think that it's important to understand that this is a regional contest, and at least increasingly, they have to take Turkey into account. Turkey has relations with Israel, which is interesting considering the fact that Turkey opposes them having relations. But I think then, therefore, we need to understand that there's a bit of an irony at play here, which is that Israel's original friends in the region in the 1950s were the non-Arab regimes. The Arab regimes were anti-Israel, Jamal Abdel Nasser and all the Arab nationalism, blah, blah, blah. In fact, much of that kind of Arab nationalist ethos comes from the concept of opposition to Zionism. Bizarrely, today, it's the opposite. The countries that are the most have a kind of worldview that is opposed to Zionism is basically emanating from Iran and more from Ankara and more in a religious kind of framework, which is this idea of the Islamic Ummah trying to liberate Al-Aqsa, all that kind of blah, 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 that you hear a lot when it's used from Tehran's rhetoric, which is of course a rhetoric. It's a propaganda trying to adopt the Palestinian cause. But Jamal Abdel Nasser also adopted the Palestinian cause. Everyone always trying to take their cause from them. So today it's interesting how it's all reversed itself. Turkey and Iran are adopting the cause. And the Gulf, the Arab states that supported the Palestinians financially, I don't know about militarily, but certainly financially, for many years, are taking more of a backseat and saying, okay, well, maybe we can work with Israel. And it seems to me that, yeah, the crucible that drove Israel and the Gulf states together is not just the Iranian problem, which was always there for decades. It's the Turkish problem. I wouldn't call it a Turkish problem. It's the reality of what Turkey has become. And that's only happened in the last few years. So I think that it's important to recognize that in just the last 4 or 5 or 6 years, as the Erdogan regime became closer to Qatar during the Gulf crisis in 2017, the new leadership in Riyadh of MBS and his alliance with MBZ, all of that brought this together rapidly. And of course, the Trump administration is sort of the magic dust on top, which I think also accelerated this train, because we're just talking about processes, and these processes are all kind of moving on a track. And I get the sense that all of this, it's like someone put the hand on the throttle all of a sudden to kind of throw everything together. And so that's where we are, it seems like.
You know, as you mentioned, it is a very interesting reversal on how Turkey went from the first Muslim nation to recognize Israel back in March 1949. And now that the relationship is at this nadir where they're essentially competing with each other to some extent within the neighborhood. Yet it's also kind of funny because Turkish media is actually still boasting about, through COVID-19, strong trade relations between Israel and Turkey. And ostensibly, they do share a set of rivals, at least in Syria. How do you, though, interpret Turkey's specific objections to these decisions by the Gulf countries to establish open diplomatic relations with Israel?
Well, my sense is it's complicated. I mean, look, the Erdogan government or regime or AKP party, when it came to power in the early 2000s, it was not extremely anti-Israel. If we go back to that period, 1998, until the AKP came to power, in fact, until 2006, 7, 8, 9, about 10 years, actually, there was a honeymoon. I mean, Israel and Turkey, not only did they have relationships since the 50s, but they had an extremely good relationship in that period. And it's interesting, of course, when we understand what happened, which is, I think, the AK party or AKP party came to power wanting to change a lot of things in Turkey, not just the religious issues, but they also had a kind of liberalization, not only the economy, but also a liberalizing attitude towards the Kurdish issue. And those were the years when they were seeking peace and they were going to allow Kurdish language and everything. And everything, by the way, looked positive, like, except for that you said, well, okay, but it's going to be a bit more religious. But they had it in the ideas, yeah, okay, but we're not going to enforce secularism and people have a right if you want to wear hijab in college or whatever, fine. So it looked like everything was good. But I think that behind the scenes, what happened was for a whole series of unfortunate incidents, like the 2009 conflict with Gaza, which Turkey had been involved in peace negotiations between Israel and Syria and was very outraged by what happened. And they began to adopt this cause as much more of an Islamic cause. And I think that, you know, Turkey was openly, of course, more into Hamas because the AK party and the Hamas have a roots in the Brotherhood. And I think that what happened is that there was a realization once, as you recall, Hamas was in Gaza and began to run Gaza in 2006. And there was a bifurcation of the Palestinians. And so all of a sudden, Turkey's role in the Palestinian issue was only a Gaza role because it wasn't able to broker things with the Palestinian Authority. And then you had the Arab Spring and you had Morsi come to power in Egypt. And that looked good for Turkey because Turkey and Egypt could be allies. And when Morsi was overthrown in 2013, suddenly Turkey lost its Brotherhood ally there. Hamas was isolated. And the Mavi Marmara had taken place at the same era, which was 2011, when the Turkish citizens were killed. And again, an unfortunate incident, but of course, it's unprecedented for a country to organize a flotilla to try to break into another country's area. I mean, Turkey talks a lot about sovereignty, blah, blah, blah. So it would be a bit unprecedented for Israel to try to send a flotilla to Afrin, an area that Turkey illegally occupies. It would be strange for Israel to organize a flotilla to go to northern Cyprus to support Greek ambitions. So it's a bit insane what Turkey did, allowing this IHH to do this flotilla, but it allowed it. And then, of course, there was a clash. So I think that we look at those kind of little waypoints along the way. And look, Turkey then became, or at least the government of Turkey, became extremely hostile to Israel. I mean, demonstrably, symbolically hostile, but also openly hostile in terms of Erdogan storming off stage when he was speaking with Perez and all these things. I think they were at Davos or whatever. And then, of course, the ambassadors were thrown out and all of that. So when the Trump administration came to power, Turkey thought that the Trump administration would be a very close ally, because Turkey was very close with some people that were close to Trump, including the first national security advisor, Mr. Flynn. And Turkey believed it had an in with the Trump administration because it was disgusted by the Obama administration. As we know now, Turkey has kind of burned that bridge, not only because it attacked protesters in D.C. and bought the S-400s, but I think that, you know, Turkey was very kind of then felt it needed to show off its outrage about the embassy move. It threw, you know, and I think we just look at this kind of series of things. And as the regime in Turkey became more and more extreme and kind of full of itself and arrogant, it felt it could burn in more and more bridges. And so I don't think we've seen Turkey's regime yet directly challenge Israel, except for in rhetoric. And I think the question is then when we get to that point, because, you know, it doesn't want more relations with Israel in the Gulf. It desperately does not want the East Med pipeline and things like that. And so I think we're looking to the point where, you know, when does Turkey decide that it needs to revive the Hamas issue? You know, they've been hosting Hamas a lot with two red carpet meetings this year already. So I would say that we're looking at a emerging problem there. And the question is when that will happen. I think that so far, it's just this rhetoric. You know, Turkey, it's very easy for the foreign ministry in Turkey, which anyway, daily generates crises and insane, crazy things that they say to slam Europeans. So it's very easy for them to release a statement bashing the Bahrain or whatever. Like, it's the norm in Turkey. Well, every day there's some new crazy diplomatic crisis because they thrive on it. Which is fine. The question is, when does that become an actual real crisis?
You know, the rhetoric that's coming out of President Erdogan and members of his ruling government does seem to be resonating to an extent in Israel. I mean, earlier this year, the IDF, the Israeli Defense Forces, released an assessment where, for the first time, they listed Turkey as a challenge. And then shortly after the normalization deal between the Emirates and Israel, it was reported that Yossi Cohen, the head of the Mossad, had remarked to some of his fellow spy masters that Iranian power is fragile, but the real threat is from Turkey. Is it just the rhetoric that fuels this perception among parts of the Israeli security agencies? When did Turkey really begin to grow more menacing in their minds to you?
Well, I'm not exactly sure when that happened, but I think that certainly the feeling that Turkey is drifting into the anti-Israel camp about 10 years ago, and that it will never come back in the sense that this is not just a blip, but this is a broader trend. And that Turkey is mobilizing regional forces against Israel or global forces. And I think that that is what became a larger concern. And I think, you know, Turkey, in contrast to Iran, Iran is a very powerful country in some ways. It makes long distance missiles. It builds drones. It's working on a nuclear program. The Iranian army is basically weak and pathetic. There is no real, I mean, when's the last time Iran invaded a country? I don't remember it. But the Turks have a very strong NATO.
I know it was Iran-Iraq war around 1980 or so, and that just ended up becoming a bit of a war of attrition.
Right. So I don't think Iran has a very powerful, strong army. And Iran, the evidence is that Iran doesn't like to lose soldiers because its own population is anti-regime, I think, basically. So Iran knows that it's very, very fragile on the inside. What Iran is very good at is proxy warfare and exporting missile technology to its friends, like the Hezbollah and Houthis. So Iran has a model. It's a model of influence peddling and rocket peddling and trafficking weapons, and it works very well. And it's very, very dangerous to Israel, of course. But Israel has dealt with the Iranian enemy for decades. So it's the enemy that everyone knows. I think the Turkish emerging problem is the question is, okay, Turkey's a member of NATO and has a very powerful army. And Turkey has shown in the last few years it's willing to use that army a lot more. Ever since the coup attempt, Erdogan has had the army running in circles doing things, invasions every year, more and more and more invasions. Afrin, Tel Abyad, northern Iraq, Libya, it's all just to keep them busy. So I think the question is, well, if you get addicted to keeping your army busy, people have to wonder, when does that busyness start to reflect on Israel? And I think there is a concern as, what is Turkey going to do? Are they going to try to insert themselves more in Jerusalem or in Gaza, or, you know, where else could that become a problem? And in the Eastern Mediterranean, will we see more attempts to harass Israel? Of course, Israel's exclusive economic zone ostensibly doesn't impact with Turkey at all, because it's got Egypt here and it's got the Lebanon and Cyprus, so it's not really connected. But I think there is a question as to what's Turkey's overall role and goal. And, you know, is Turkey a strategic threat down the road or something like that? So I think that, and if you look at it from an intelligence perspective, I mean, there are must be questions. What's Turkey doing with Hamas? What is Turkey doing perhaps with Hezbollah? You know, what is Turkey doing with Qatar? I mean, I think there must be some questions about certainly that wider intelligence question. And certainly whatever intelligence sharing used to exist in 2005 when Israel and Turkey were much closer, I mean, I guess if you were in the intelligence community, they would know whether or not that exists anymore. So I assume someone like the head of Mossad would be able to make a determination as to whether what's really going on. And if he feels that Turkey is a rising threat, and if the IDF also feels that, those two key pieces of evidence, which have been reported worldwide, would point to a growing consensus in the Israeli establishment that there is a serious problem on the horizon.
To my knowledge, short of Erdogan's rhetoric, the big concern seems to be Turkey's longstanding relationship now with Hamas, which you touched on several times now. And we've seen how Turkey's used Hamas essentially as a vehicle for establishing some kind of influence over the Palestinian issue. But of course, this relationship has rankled Israel in a number of cases. Israel's repeatedly complained about how Turkey has provided safe haven to many of Hamas's operatives. On August 14th, the Telegraph reported that Turkey had granted citizenship even to several of Hamas's senior operatives, including a member who had attempted an assassination on the mayor of Jerusalem. And only a week, I believe, after the meeting that announced the normalization between Israel and the Emirates, Erdogan had hosted some of Hamas's leadership. And this was a meeting that was then condemned by the U.S. State Department. So in your view, how does Israel's normalization with these Arab countries affect Turkey's cooperation with Hamas? Do you think it's going to intensify?
Yeah, I would think that if you're Turkey, you have to find a way to balance this. So they would need to intensify that. I would assume that that's part of the imagery of those meetings and the red carpets. And I would think that, you know, if you look at Hamas also went to Lebanon after that to try to purchase up some influence there, hanging out with Hezbollah, hanging out with in the refugee camps with lots of guns and stuff. So it would seem to me that that's symbolic. I mean, Hamas goes and meets with, you know, Erdogan, and that's kind of their big benefactor a bit with Qatar. I mean, and then they go to Lebanon and hang out with Hezbollah, which would seem to me, you know, that would tell you that the big myth of the kind of Sunni Shia, you know, sectarian divide is a bit of a myth. And in fact, Hamas, Hezbollah, and all these extremist political Islamic groups actually are all basically the same, or they all on the same side, at least when it comes to Israel on certain issues, hatred of the Gulf, for instance. And that's what Turkey, I would think, would want to operationalize that at some point. I don't know. Turkey has a very thin line it has to walk right now, which is that Turkey is still a member of NATO. It's a member. It works with the EU and UN. It poses as being a kind of normal stabilizing country, even though, in fact, it's obviously a destabilizing influence. And it's involved in the illegal occupation of Syria, illegal weapons trafficking to Libya and all these things. But I think, you know, there may be a bridge too far for Turkey, which is if evidence were to emerge that it was involved in any Hamas plots against Israel, that would really burn a bridge with the Trump administration. And I think that Turkey certainly would be worried about alienating the administration too much, because it doesn't, as you know, Turkey openly opposes the Biden's campaign for the presidency. So the country would have a problem if it were to bash both of them. And they understand the Trump administration is very close to Israel. So, you know, I think there is already evidence that has been basically leaked to the Telegraph or what have you, basically talking about Turkey giving citizenship to Hamas members and enabling them to make plots from Turkish soil. So that was in design. That was designed, I would think, to embarrass Turkey, whoever leaked that. So therefore, the leak was involved in having a press report that would make Turkey kind of climb back. And Turkey's not stupid. I mean, the people that run Turkey are certainly very smart people, even if Erdogan's team is a demagogic populist extremist team that is going in the direction of extremism. I think that it certainly has proven itself not stupid. It's run the country for a long time. So I think they would have to weigh their options in terms of, okay, well, what do we do with Hamas and how do we get back at the Gulf states for this recognition? And obviously, if you've heard Iran's rhetoric, it's that they've hinted at military types of actions or undermining regimes or whatever. We know what Iran is capable of in that end. I don't think we know what Turkey's capable of yet, because Turkey so far is basically, its role is Afrin, Tel Abyad, northern Iraq, Libya. You know, Turkey likes to prey on weak areas and kind of move in and Turkify them, which is, you know, people say it's neo-Ottomanism or whatever. But okay, but how does it, what's it going to do down in Gaza or down in the Gulf? I think we haven't seen that yet. And that's a hand that Turkey's not ready to play.
Yeah, and Turkey, at least compared to Iran, does not have the history of any established networks and connections that Iran has fostered over the years, at least within Lebanon and among groups like Hamas. But moving over to Iran now, I think it would be important to point out how Turkey this week had met with Iran's leadership. Erdogan met with Rouhani, and they talked about new areas of cooperation post-COVID-19. And this also came just before the announcement related to Bahrain. And shortly afterwards, speaking to the Tehran Times, Hamas's representative in Iran called on both countries, along with Qatar, to formalize an alliance against Israel. How do you view Turkey's relationship with Iran? And do you think there's enough shared interests between the two of them for them to actually formalize any sort of regional alliance?
I mean, I don't know if there would be an alliance like a pact, but I think that the evidence is that Turkey and Iran currently are working together on several issues, one of which is Israel. Certainly that's one that unites them. Syria is more complicated because they're ostensibly on different sides, but I think that their kind of tacit agreement in Syria is kind of to partition the country in spheres of influence, which means that Turkey gets the north and Iran gets the south and Russia gets the middle or something like that. So I think, they have a shared interest as well, which is that they all hate the Americans. I mean, I know Turkey supposedly is an American ally, but, you know, in terms of Syria, Turkey has openly called America a supporter of terrorism. So, you know,
Turkey. The Ottoman slap a few years ago as well.
Right. So Turkey and Iran hate the United States' role in Syria. I'm not sure what Turkey, you know, how much it cares about Turkey, America's involvement in Iraq, but it does seem that on many files, they could work together. So that would lead us to all the stories of rumors that Turkey's interested in what's happening in Yemen, et cetera, et cetera. And I think we have to wonder about down the road, will there be a Turkey-Iran, not alliance, but I would think a growing consensus of emerging interest, because you know, Turkey is very obvious, like the regime at least is pretty clear what it says. It openly bashes most other countries in the world, whether it's the Europeans or Israel or the Gulf countries. It's not afraid to bash them. So if Turkey was, quote unquote, opposed to Iran or enemy state of Iran, then you would see anti-Iranian rhetoric. But when's the last time there was an anti-Iran regime statement from Turkey? Maybe 5 years ago or so. Something during some crisis in Iraq in 2015 or 2016. But there basically is none of that. So we know the Turkish media is very open because the Turkish media is just a direct mouthpiece for whatever happens in Ankara. So it's kind of obvious. If you want to know when does Turkey angry with Iran, just read the opinion pages of TRT or Anadolu or Daily Sabah, and you can find out what do they think. Well, we know what they think, because I don't see any articles that are against Iran. So therefore, it would lead me to believe that Turkey's current government is trying to cultivate some sort of relationship with Iran, and Iran is openly saying, great, please, we want to have $30 billion in trade. So, okay. Of course, Iran has a lot of interest in the trade that Turkey doesn't. Turkey doesn't need Iran maybe as much as Iran needs Turkey, because Iran does need a big fat trade border with a modern country like Turkey. Whereas Iran's other trade borders are basically countries that are bordering on disaster states. So that would be great for Iran. For Turkey, what do they get out of the Iranian relationship? I mean, as I said, they can stir up some pots, for pressuring the U.S. and Syria. They can obviously work together on bashing Israel. And I don't know what else. I mean, they both work with Russia also. They both probably work closely with China more, with the Belt and Road Initiative. So you could see it as just a gigantic emerging anti-Western alliance, which seeks to supplant American hegemony and obviously supplant European hegemony as well. And I think that's probably how Ankara would like to look at it, which is that Ankara likes the idea of, quote unquote, putting Europeans in their place, as they tend to say, so, or slapping them. So I think that the overall emerging concept is, yeah, okay, we Ottomans and Persians and Russians and Chinese can all work together, and we'll get these Americans and Europeans out of here, and then we can kind of divide the region in terms of influence. And everyone says, okay, yeah, well, then eventually they all have to clash. Yeah, okay, eventually maybe they'll clash when they're done dividing all the spoils, but that will take a while because they have a lot of common enemies. Also, like Saudi Arabia is obviously a common adversary as well. So,
yeah, so Saudi Arabia, the Emirates, Bahrain now, it seems that Iran and Turkey are in this moment establishing what I think could be fairly characterized as an alliance of convenience, almost in some ways similar to Turkey's relationship with Russia, where they'll work together where it seems that they both benefit, but then on certain issues they'll still experience levels of friction.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, we have to see what happens. Like, I think it seems to me that the region is being sort of partitioned. So it's a question as to when is my enemy is my friend or whatever. So the question is, okay, but what happens when you take out the enemy? Then your enemy of your enemy is not your friend. Now your friend is now also your enemy. So, I mean, it's a complicated story, but I just think we have to just read, if you just read Iranian regime media and Turkish media, which is basically all pro-regime anyway, I think you get a sense of where these countries stand. And that means that you can openly see who they criticize and who they don't. And I don't see them criticizing each other that much. There was a time years ago when Turkey was more critical of groups like the Hajj al-Shabi and the pro-Iranian sectarian militias. And, there was a time when I think Iran used to accuse Turkey of supporting, Takfiri militants, blah, blah, blah. And I think they've dialed back that rhetoric. So it seems to me that that's where we could look for what comes next.
Okay, so we'll move on to our final question. And it's about the potential future for Turkey and Israel's relationship. It seems right now they're at the lowest point it's ever been. And it doesn't seem that there's any real clear signs about where it's actually going to go. So what I want to ask you is, where do you think it can go? Do you think it's likely to get worse before it gets better between the two of them?
Yeah, I mean, I would generally think that it's likely to get worse. But I also know that, there is a lot of, rhetoric is one thing, and there is obviously trade and tourism, and, Israel and Turkey are both modern countries. They're both very closely linked to Europe. At one point, we're part of the Western strategic kind of paradigm in terms of military affairs. So you never know what can happen. The current nature of the Turkish government's governing regime is that it likes to create crises every month, and it just can't. It's addicted to this craziness. There's no evidence that it's going to become more moderate. So that's the general trend of extremist regimes. So it's hard to imagine when it will come back from that. I mean, I think that, of course, it's unfortunate because probably Turkey and Israel have many things in common, not least of which is the fact that they were both actually created from similar types of nationalist movements that developed in the 19th century and early 20th century. So they have many things in common. They also have a history of secularist, socialist concepts blended with nationalist, ethnocratic concepts, and they have now become more religious and more nationalist. And both of them, in a bizarre way, the issue that Israel has faced with the Palestinians is sometimes best compared to the issue that Turkey has had with Kurdish issues. And that is not always easy, because it seems that generally Israel has a very good relationship with Kurds. But in terms of having a national minority and different types of groups that are opposed, I think, and a large diaspora issues, I mean, there's many, many things that link Turkey and Israel. But just because they're similar doesn't mean that they get along. And they obviously don't get along. Just like there's many things that link Israel to Iran. Jewish history is deep in Iran. Iran is a much more diverse and interesting country. And I think that the idea that Israel and Iran should be allies is natural. The bizarre fact is that they're not, because the Iranian regime hates Israel. So any day of the week that Iran and Turkey would like to change their government or just become normal, Israel and Iran and Turkey and all these countries would get along very well. There's no reason that they shouldn't. It's just the accident of history and the ridiculous nature of the two regimes that happen to run these countries, which I don't think are putting any logic in terms of what they're doing, because it could be a peaceful region. There's no reason for all these countries to be fighting each other. But obviously, the AK party and the regime in Iran thrive off of these conflicts and gain a lot by them, because they get to stay in power somehow.
Seth Frantzman, thank you so much for your time and insights today. It was a pleasure speaking to you.
Thank you.
My name is Nicholas Morgan, and this is Turkey Abroad.
You can follow Ahval News Online podcast series through Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, Google Podcasts, SoundCloud, and Spreaker. All you need to know about Turkey is here, for your ears, mind, and attention. Thank you for listening to our podcast.